Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Happy January 2nd, everybody. Good to be with you. Texans, Titans, Sunday at noon, closing out the regular season. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I will have Texans countdown starting at 9 a.m. On Sunday. Looking forward to getting back on that Sunday schedule again. It's been a while. Been a minute.
Yeah. That's the Texans. Look, the Texans, as of late, have played like a team that should be playing at noon on Sundays. Okay?
They have, yeah.
So it feels more appropriate. We're back to where they should be.
Yeah.
Especially versus the Titans.
We're home, baby. We're home.
Oh, yeah. They're playing the Titans, you say.
Yeah.
And it's the way they've been playing recently? Yeah, put them at noon.
Yep.
I did, but real quick.
Yeah.
I was reminding myself this morning that the last time they had a long break, they came back and they beat the Dolphins. Really good victory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after the bye week. Yep.
And then they went and they played a really competitive three quarters versus the Chiefs, and then they fell apart.
Right.
But like, I'm trying to, without being overly generous or anything, I'm trying to remind myself that all right, it was a really weird three game stretch in 12 days. They played three good quarters of football versus the Chiefs, but the Chiefs just looked like a much more professional team in the fourth quarter. Sometimes you gotta take a game like the Ravens and just try to wash it away and almost act like it doesn't matter. For my own mental health, that's what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they've had a little bit of a mini bye itself with a 10-day break, like, all right, come back, wipe the slate clean,
yeah,
and maybe we'll see a different version of the Texans for one quarter or however long most of the starters play.
Yeah, it's wild, man. They clinched a playoff spot 3 weeks ago, and I feel like this is as like stocked down as the fan base has been on this team
yeah.
in a long, long time.
And I feel like, you know what, I think part of this was CJ's comment yesterday that we're about to play that it was a little bit of a pep talk for me. I don't think he intended it that way, but it kind of got to put a chip on my shoulder a little bit.
Let's play it because I had a reaction to it also. Let's play it here. Here was CJ when he was asked about how excited he is about January football, and it kind of, the answer kind of went to a place where you're going, okay, well, they're hearing some of this noise outside of the building.
It's a new season, you know, it's a new excitement, you know, you 0-0, and it's all about, you know, winning that week, you know, and it's, when you dumb it down, it's like, all right, you get to win four more games, and, you know, that's it, you know, so. Of course, it's not that easy, but, you know, you have to find a way to motivate yourself. But it's motivation just, you know, being able to contend, you know. And I think it's good for us, you know, to realize, like, man, I don't know exactly what's being said, but, you know, we put ourselves in this position. It's not by chance. It's not by luck. It's not by other people. It's about us being a good football team. And I want my team to remember that as, like, you know, people are going to talk. Simple and plain. And we're the ones out there playing, and we got into the playoffs by being a good football team, and we're going to continue to be that. So, you know, I'm excited, man. It's a new 0-0, and, you know, hopefully we get healthy going into there and be able to, you know, play whoever we play here really tough and hopefully get a win.
Okay, so now a good football team would channel all this noise in a way that is positive for the postseason. You know what I mean? Like, that part of it, I'm like, okay, is there an us against the world thing going on with the Texans in the building? If so, let's try that. You know, whatever they're doing right now is not working all that well. Let's try that. The us against the world part of it. So I'm fine with that, you know.
Well, I guess when he says like whatever the noise is out there, he's not really sure about it. I feel like CJ's probably at a point where he realizes he needs to try to ignore social media as much as possible, or even ESPN or whatever they're saying on there. Yeah. But it's still seeping in. It's almost impossible because there's always somebody that mentions it to you. Like, hey, did you see that guy called you the worst quarterback in the world? You're right. Like, no, I'm trying to ignore stuff like that, but thanks for letting me know. I feel like he's probably at a part where he knows he shouldn't be looking at stuff, so he sees it, and then he remembers, but he sees it, and then he's like, oh, yeah, I got to set it aside.
Yeah, I the sense I got from what he was saying there, the whole thing about we put ourselves here, we're a good team, you know, we earned it, was his message was we earned this spot in the postseason. I think what he's referring to there is less to do about him personally and way more to do with the narrative of they're only in there because they're in this crappy AFC South.
That's
the only reason. That's the only reason that the Texans are in the playoffs is somebody's got to come out of this ratchet division, and it's the Houston Texans. And I think he's hearing that, and if he's hearing it, others are. And they're saying, no, man, we earned this. We went and won those football games. You know, and I think it's a combination of those two things, if we're being honest.
Right, right. No, and it is. It's not like some kind of – it wasn't a committee that put them in or anything. It's all right. We did what we had to do to be in the playoffs.
That's right.
Let's hyper-analyze the fact that he said win four more games.
Okay.
When, indeed, they're – theoretically, there could be five more games on the schedule. I feel like that's evidence enough that, no, they're not going to treat this Titans game like much of a football game at all. Unless he's just not familiar with the playoff format yet, and he doesn't know that he has to win. If they want to win a Super Bowl or go to a Super Bowl, they're going to play four games in the playoffs.
Right, right. That's what I thought. I thought when the question was about January football, the person asking it, and I think he took January football to mean playoff football. So
but he said we got to go. We can win four more games. Yeah, that's a you got five.
You are nitpicking him right now. You are.
I'm not nitpicking him. I'm saying I looked at that as evidence. It's like, yeah, I know we got to go out and play this preseason.
Oh yeah. No, that's you're right. You're 100% right about that. Like
we got to play the preseason game against the Titans, and then we got four games to go.
Yeah. Yep. But they're hearing it, man. Channeled properly, I hope they hear it. You know that people. If people not believing in you is something that drives you, which CJ has said before, it's been a big driver in his career, then go channel.
I mean, the only other thing about it, though, too, is if you look at it, just take the division out of it, even though obviously like the division games end up being easier.
Yeah.
But there's only three, four, five, six. There's seven teams that have won nine games or more now.
Yeah.
You know, like and the Texans are there. So regardless of division winner or not, the number of teams in the playoffs, they've gotten to that spot. So division or not, they've been a winning football team.
Yeah.
They've played like a 500 football team for most of the season, including when they were 6-2.
Right.
They were playing pretty much like a 500 football team.
Yeah.
But in this modern NFL, they take almost 50% of the teams to the playoffs.
That's right. And there's nobody with a brain out here comparing their body of work to the Chiefs or the Bills or any of the teams that they lost to over in the NFC. I mean, they beat the Bills this year, but you know, there's nobody saying they're on that tier right now, unless they're completely delusional. To which I would say, at the other end, the people that text in like they're trash, they're awful, they're this, they're ass. Like what? Okay, well, you sound just as stupid as a Texan fan would sound that's saying, well, they're right on the same level as the Chiefs and the Ravens, right?
Right.
Now.
Yeah. It's you know what? You know what's happened is I think the word mediocre has turned into almost like people, it's synonymous in some people's minds with trash, where like, no, mediocre is middle of the pack. You're average. You're just a average jamoke. So, yeah, I mean, and that's a depressing argument to get into. No, they're not trash. They're mediocre. We're the most mediocre team out there, and you're calling them trash?
Okay, I'm gonna read Merriam-Webster's definition of mediocre, because you brought this up just now. So I'm going to read this, and you tell me if this describes the Houston Texans, okay? Merriam-Webster defines mediocre as of moderate or low quality, value, ability, or performance. Ordinary, so-so.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, they're mediocre plus.
Yeah,
they're like if you take out that the low quality.
Yeah, the low quality. Yeah. I would extract from that definition. They're not low quality.
Yeah, it says okay, another definition of only moderate quality, not very good.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, they're not very good. They're okay.
Yeah.
That's where they've been, and you know they have the potential. Theoretically, they should have. They've got the potential to be more, but except the things that are holding them back and keeping them from being very good. If it is indeed the coaching, mm-hmm. if it's the composition of your offensive line or whatever else, I mean, they are what we thought they were about midway through the season, which is all right. It's the team, the unit on the team that has the potential at least to have a freakishly good run in the playoffs is the defense. So. Yeah. For them to be a genuinely good football team, it would have to be because the defense is playing out of their minds in the playoffs. They have to go on a stretch of taking the ball away four times every single week, which is really hard to do in the playoffs versus good teams.
CJ was asked yesterday, what do you want to see from yourself in this last game against the Titans? How are you feeling right now physically?
Just being myself, you know, trying as best as I can to make plays, you know, and that's, you know, what my job is, and to get guys lined up, make sure guys are doing the right job, doing their job the right way, and, you know, communicating well. So, yeah, I mean, those things, and, of course, you know, throwing the pill. That's, I just want to get back to, you know, feeling good again. I feel like I'm body getting better, so, you know, that helps.
You mentioned after the last game, banged up, and then maybe it kept you from making some plays here or there. Is there anything else you want to offer on that?
Season, everybody's banged up.
All right, so there you go. I wanted to, that was Cody Stutes with a really good follow-up, I thought, because CJ himself proactively brought up, I'm feeling a little better now, you know?
Yeah, and so he brought up that he was banged up after the last game.
Yeah, so that was a good follow-up by Cody, but I think CJ may have heard D'Amico's answer about that on Monday. Like, yeah, man, everybody's banged up.
or that's been D'Amico's message to the team.
To the team, yeah.
I guess the part where I'm at is it's just like a major league pitcher. Sometimes anatomically it's going to affect you. There's nothing. I mean, you can tough your way through it, but when it comes to throwing either an oblong or a spherical object, sometimes you're just affected by the injuries and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
That's why I would prefer just not to play him at all, because if CJ's banged up enough that he's brought it up, that at least is an explanation for some of his curiously errant passes that we didn't really see from him all that much last year. Him airmailing Nico Collins when he had time and space in the pocket and
that
he knew it.
That was jarring.
That was, I mean, and it was really bad. That's where I want to get him as healthy as possible, and I don't think any amount of chemistry with the offensive line or Deontay Johnson or anything supersedes or is of equal importance to just him being as healthy as possible in the playoffs.
For those,
you can do a lot of damage in one quarter of football if that's all he plays.
Oh, yeah. No, one hit, man. That's all it takes.
One Tavondre Sweat landing on
you. Yeah, that's it. No, you're right now, but for the benefit of people just getting in their cars and listening now or just waking up and listening now who've been listening all week, you predicted earlier in the week you thought CJ would sit. Now, after listening to these press conferences with two D'Amico press conferences and a CJ press conference, you think he's going to play now?
I think he will, just because D'Amico has said multiple times that, well, he said everybody will play, which, you know, that can mean different things. And then they'll see how the game goes.
Yeah.
And CJ said something similar about, you know, D'Amico's got a plan and we'll see how the game goes or something like that. Okay, they're gonna go out just like in a preseason game where, hey, if the offense goes out and scores on the first drive, we've seen enough.
Yep.
Let's get him out and there we go. And I'm just kind of torn on that. Again, because keeps coming to my mind? Like, one of the things that helped the Ravens win the Super Bowl, their first Super Bowl victory, was when Tony Siragusa landed really hard on Rich Gannon. And he got a penalty for it, fined afterwards, but it pretty much screwed up Rich Gannon for the rest of the game. I don't want something like that happening, because Tavondre Sweat is a Tony Siragusa-sized human.
He's Siragusa-esque, yes.
Except more muscle.
Yeah.
He's like a better body composition Tony Siragusa.
And more wiggle in the open field.
Yeah, he's got a lot more wiggle than
I just can't get over that play where he had the ball in his hands a few weeks ago. That was amazing. So, okay, I'll put the over-under at 2.5 series for the offense. Or for CJ. I mean, obviously the offense is going to play the whole game. For CJ Stroud, 2.5 series, over or under?
2.5 series.
2.5 drives.
I'll take the under.
2.5 drives. Yeah.
2.5 drives. I'll take the under. Yeah.
Take the under. So you think, yeah. So I think two. I'm with you. I think if they score, an impressive, you know, like it's a normal looking drive. You know, if it's an 80-yard run by Joe Mixon, I think you bring him back out for that. You haven't really accomplished what it is you're maybe looking to accomplish with CJ, but maybe you have. I don't know.
It feels like the last few games they've had a couple of games that have been really low possession games, the total number of possessions. Because even I'll tell you the perfect example is the Ravens, because the defense was getting driven on. And you know, in the last couple of games, the offense has had nice drives, but they falter in the red zone.
Yeah.
But that last game, even with the extra long halftime, it ended up being over in like 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Well,
it was
the fourth quarter was like, it's 15 minutes of clock time. The actual quarter was like 25 minutes.
Yeah,
the Ravens are just handing off and getting first downs the whole fourth quarter.
So, I'm thinking, I don't think they'll get more than two possessions in the first quarter. So whether the cutoff time is the first quarter or the first couple of possessions, I think that'll probably be
it. Man, just stay healthy. Oh, I'm going to be so stressed out during that first quarter with CJ in there, man. He is their most valuable guy, no doubt. Even as up and down as his season has been, they don't get to where they hope to get to with Davis Mills at quarterback. Sorry, Davis. Derek Stingley Jr. is a big topic at the two press conferences yesterday. Stingley's had a really good season. I saw Bill Barnwell yesterday named him to his first team All-Pro team.
Haven't I wished death upon him enough that he shouldn't be writing these 20,000-word articles anymore?
He's got some blood magic going on, man, because your death wishes are not working. They're bouncing off of Bill Barnwell.
I think Barnwell's
like bullets off of Superman's chest.
I have a theory that Barnwell's working for like $22,000 a year just for the love of the game at this point.
Yeah.
Because they've gotten rid of everybody else that's kind of analytical. Like, they got rid of Zach Lowe, who's actually good on television and everything. I feel like Barnwell's just in there. He's like the Schwab at this point. He's like he's a relic from a bygone era, and they're just keeping him around for whatever.
As an homage to the average number of words in one of your articles, we're going to pay you $22,000 a year. How's that sound? Yeah.
One of the people asked it was when he asked D'Amico about Stingley. He said that Stingley was snubbed last year from the Pro Bowl.
He
had played in like 8 games by the time the voting was done.
Yeah.
It wasn't, he hadn't, he missed, because he stopped the Pro Bowl voting 2 weeks before the end of the regular season.
That's right.
He'd missed over half the season up to that point.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't snubbed.
No, he was named an
alternate.
He played
at a Pro Bowl level when he came back and was healthy, but he did not get snubbed.
Yeah, it was Aaron Wilson asked that question. Let's get to what C.J. Stroud had to say about Derek Stingley. Okay, what does this answer about Stingley tell us? Does it tell us anything about C.J.? Here's C.J. Stroud on his teammate, Derek Stingley Jr.
He's probably the best athlete I've been around in my life, you know, just ball skills, speed, strength, size, you know, and just somebody who, you know, is I've seen just grow, you know, as a player. But, you know, I'm just very happy for him. You know, I think, especially just having this type of year before, I think he can renegotiate. So, he's about to get a bag, and I'm happy for him. He deserves it. So, but that's not his motivation, which is dope. It's just being elite at football, and I think he's going to be great in his league for a long time.
CJ's the best. He's like, I love how he caught himself. Like, man, he's going to renegotiate. He's going to get a bag. And then CJ's like, man, I'm making my teammates sound like some sort of money grubber.
That's not what motivates him.
I better make sure everybody knows he's more motivated about football than he is about money, which I believe. Stingley, anytime Stingley gets brought up in the offseason, whether it's to Nick Caserio or to D'Amico Ryans or any of his teammates, it is brought up how Stingley is one of the guys that is in the building like every day, like in February. Like, Stingley does work his ass off. It's just, it was hard to connect his work ethic with the actual on-field stuff for the first two seasons, because he literally missed almost half of his first two seasons. He played in a total of 20 out of 34 games. He missed 14
games. That's the big question when it comes to what's a fair price, or should a guy like Nico Collins did got an extension after 3 years where he hadn't, you know, he hadn't really produced other than in one season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Derek Stingley produced at a higher level when he was healthy than Nico Collins did. And this year especially, you know, Derek Stingley has played like one of the best cornerbacks in football.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about giving a guy a longer contract, you got to take into account that injury history.
Yep.
So where do they meet in the middle on that if they do give him a deal?
Or do they meet in the middle? David Mulligetta is his agent.
Yeah, he hired Mulligetta in the offseason. Now, in terms of whether it might cause drama or not, for whatever it's worth, Micah Parsons did not create any drama last year when it would going into this season. That, you know, Micah Parsons would be one of those guys you might think about extending after his first 3 years.
Yeah.
And Micah Parsons has been, at least from all the quotes I've ever read, he sounds like he's not trying to make a big deal out of it. His agent is Mulligetta as well.
That's right.
I'm not like wringing my hands over potential drama in the offseason. I do think that if the Texans are going to extend him, I would prefer that it be kind of a modified big contract in duration, like it was with Nico, a year shorter than what a lot of other guys are getting. It's good money, but we got to take into account the fact that you haven't established an ability to play, you know, multiple seasons and stay healthy.
Yeah, it's, man, that's a complicated one. Like, it's, if I'm trying to ask myself, if Derek Stingley Jr. got a top of market contract extension this offseason, how would I feel? I'd probably feel good. I like Derek Stingley Jr. He's a great football player, but you're right. I need to see. It's almost like I need to see what the numbers look like, you know, one of those.
Well,
things.
We're also, I think we're all probably, as a fan base, we all feel a little bit burned by the counting of chickens before they're hatched.
Yeah.
And all this praise and everything else being heaped on everybody before they'd actually done anything.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to after the draft last year when Caserio kind of got testy about it and just said, we haven't won anything yet.
Yes.
Like, that's, I think a lot of us are feeling that way right now. Like, all right, let's back off on the giving everybody a boatload of money and talking about how awesome we are, mm-hmm. because they haven't really proven it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I, and it's not, it doesn't have anything to do with Derek Stingley personally. It's just, I think that's how a lot of us feel about the whole team in general right now. There's no part of me that's like, yeah, you got to be sure every one of the guys on the team comes back because look at how awesome everybody is.
Right, right.
I'm just not
right.
in that mood right this moment.
Yep, no, I get it. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Derek Stingley Jr.'s 2024 season.
Stingley has played good ball for us. He's made a lot of plays, taking the ball away. I think people have recognized what he's able to do, you know, around the league. I think he has the respect of his peers, coaches around the league. They see the growth. They see, you know, how he's stepped up and took on some tough challenges throughout the year. So, you know, he deserves whatever credit that he's getting. I think it matters most when it's coming from your peers and coaches around the league, people who are constantly watching film, diving in, and they know, you know, how they truly know how guys are playing and, you know, how they are helping their teams. And I think Stingley has earned that respect.
Yeah, Stingley's going to get a lot of accolade. He's going to make the Pro Bowl. I think he's got a really good shot at first team All Pro, if not second team All Pro. But I would we kind of sailed past this. I want to circle back to what CJ said about the bag. That he's that cognizant of where Stingley is with his contract extension possibilities.
Oh,
what is
that?
If he's got the dates circled for Derek Stingley Jr., I'm guessing he's got the dates circled for CJ Stroud as well.
He's thinking that like July of 2026 is the season of CJ's contract extension.
Right, and for those who don't know, you're eligible for a contract extension after your third season.
Yeah. This is where I am with the reality of the way the league is right now. I'm not happy about it, but basically teams, if they, by and large, the vast majority of teams, if they feel like they've still got that this guy could be the guy, they end up giving that contract extension almost independent of performance on the field. Trevor Lawrence being the prime example. And, you know, the general thinking is, all right, well, look, if we gamble on somebody in the draft, our chances are less probably than this guy actually developing, because we've seen the upside of him. And if this guy's going to develop and we wait another year, we're going to have to pay 20% more next year because the cap has been escalating so much. He's probably going to get, even if he had a year like he's having this year, there's a really good chance he gets that extension regardless.
This is better than the year he's having this year. To me, is good or better than whatever version of Trevor Lawrence got that contract. You know, so that's what I was going to ask you. Like, it's a great point how the NFL is treating it. I think Tua is another example of that. Like, someone he's multiple concussions, never won a playoff game, but boy, look what it looks like without Tua. You know, like it's, and now with Tua, it doesn't look great, but at least it looks passable. Yeah. Where, and I think Burrow, of the recent ones, I'm not talking about Mahomes, you know, several years, like of the recent extensions within the last two years or so, I think Burrow is the one where people are like, okay, yeah, this makes total sense. Guy got to a Super Bowl. When he's healthy, he's an MVP caliber player. He's proving that again this year. If they were 11-5 instead of 8-8, he would be in the conversation with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson for the MVP of the league, the way he's playing this year. So that's what I was going to ask you, Seth. Like, on a scale of like of Lawrence to Burrow, where with Lawrence getting the extension that day, I remember you and I came in that day and we were celebrating that Jacksonville gave him that money. At least I was. Yeah. I know, like, we were really happy that Jacksonville made that commitment to a guy who hadn't really proven anything, that he was even a good quarterback. And then Burrow is the gold standard at the other end, where this guy's been to a Super Bowl and he's awesome. Where is CJ, like, on that scale of the body of work he's put together so far? Like, if he were to get an extension after this year, let's say, if he were allowed to do it, how would we feel about it?
I think CJ is still way more advanced mentally than the vast majority of young quarterbacks. So that part of it I still feel good about, because that's usually the huge sticking point. You give a quarterback a contract after 3 years, and usually that third season is when you really hope you start to see next level mental functioning, the way you understand the game and read coverages and everything. And I think CJ's ahead of the curve in that regard. He's already demonstrated an ability to play at a higher level than he's played this year. So I feel better than Lawrence for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
I do think that injuries have affected something with his accuracy this year. So I'm expecting, I would put it at like a 97% chance that he gets a contract next year, even if he doesn't have a Pro Bowl or All-Pro caliber season. I mean, if you go back to look at Kyler Murray, like, where would you put him in relation? I mean, Kyler Murray was a Rookie of the Year, and then everything just kind of slowly degraded, but he got the contract.
Yeah. I feel that's a good one. Kyler Murray's a great one, actually, because Kyler's kind of, I think a lot of people thought as soon as they changed coaches, Kyler was going to be gone. And now there are rumors that he may still be gone now, because they've been a little disappointing. I put CJ on that Lawrence Burrow scale. I think Kyler is somewhere closer to Lawrence, like somewhere in between the middle and Trevor Lawrence. I put CJ ahead of Kyler Murray in terms of like how good or confident I would feel in him after getting the extension.
Yeah, and it's I mean, it's just a weird situation in terms of the way the quarterback is. You look at it and you're like, okay, they've got, when they give these contracts after 3 years, they're doing it when the team technically has at least 4 more years of control over the player.
With the franchise tag,
because they've got 2 more years on their contract and then 2 years of the franchise tag, realistically. That third year becomes kind of prohibitive. And so it's just a strange dynamic where it's barely performance based anymore.
It's
a matter of teams desperately wanting to avoid discontent or any perception that their quarterback's not the guy.
Yeah.
And then also the reality is, all right, we like this guy. We think he's got the potential to develop. The option is we go with a rookie who we have no clue about, or we bring in an Aaron Rodgers or a Kirk Cousins.
Right.
It's easy to think, well, we'll go out and get Tom Brady. Like, all right. But it could also be Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins.
Well, and it could be Sam Darnold, who was the least of those guys that you would have wanted to have brought in to run your team. You know what I mean?
But it's still a huge crapshoot, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's worked out for Sam Darnold. Right. It's worked out way better than I thought it was going to.
100%.
But it's still a huge crapshoot.
Yeah, it's no question about it. It's really, I mean, the way you lay it out, it's where the NFL has started to become more NBA-like.
Yeah.
You know, where you see guys able to kind of fidget and bicker their way out of places. Teams, the discontent that you talk about is a great point. I think that's solely the reason why teams don't use the power that they have to control the quarterback wage scale, because they don't want the quarterback to be making noise. They don't want him to be a cancer in the locker room.
And that's where I try to, like, I always get disgusted with, it's my generation, these GMs and head coaches now are either like late stage millennials or they're in Gen X. I get frustrated with them because I grew up in a league where, all right, at any given time, there were five guys who were murderously disgruntled with the front office. And the front office and the head coach would basically be like, oh, too bad.
Yeah.
Here's a tissue. You know, go ahead and go cry in a corner.
Talk to your union rep.
I mean, I was in a situation where a player brought a loaded weapon to the facility once. I'm not going to say who it was because I'm still scared of him. But... God, it was in Jacksonville, not here.
Right.
Like, it just, there was way more tolerance for disgruntlement back in the day.
Yeah.
But what I have to remember is that things are just different because of social media and everything else, that the times have changed, and it's a lot harder to weather disgruntled players these days because it blows up so enormously and so quickly, more so than it used to.
Oh yeah, it blows up everywhere, not just in your locker room, but the fans have a louder voice, and you know, in things,
yeah.
And that can create. People are going to laugh when I say the fans can create like some of this agita as well. I'll point to John Mara, whose main reason for wanting to keep Saquon Barkley was he's our most popular player. You know,
yeah.
Like it's so. Speaking of CJ, here's D'Amico Ryans asked about CJ in year two and kind of gives a broad general answer about players advancing from year one to year two.
Our young guys have, you know, that second year is where you learn like what it truly takes to be a pro. And those things are not only on the field, but off the field. Like, what are you doing? How are you conducting yourself when you're away from the building? Like, what does it take? Preparation when you're here in the building. I think that second year, third year, that's when guys truly get, you know, their routine of what truly works for them. And you have to lean on veteran guys, and you have to also just grow through it. Like, you have to make some, you have to hit some bumps along the road as a young player to understand, like, your routine. Like, we've all been there as young players, and you have to figure out that routine. It doesn't happen instantly, and you continue to grow and fine-tune that routine of what works for you as you get further along in your career.
Okay, the longer that answer went, the more I felt like it was about the routine involving maybe how you treat your body in the off season, working out.
Yeah.
At the very, knowing that that question was specifically about CJ Stroud, and listening to the first like 15 seconds of it when he's talking about on and off the field.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if he's talking about that podcast circuit that CJ was on last year, or Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Because the only thing I would change about CJ Stroud's off season routine, whatever it is, I would tell him, keep working out with your teammates. If you work out in California and you work out here, whatever it is you're doing, because I don't know everything that he does physically, like, you know, who he works out with, who his trainers are, this and that. I don't have any commentary on that. I would say I would treat February a little differently, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do the interviews, like he was doing these interviews last year, and in retrospect now, you go back and look at him, and you start to think, man, I wonder if he just thought this was a little... If he realized that maybe this, it looked a little too easy to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And it's right. Or just, I mean, all of it is almost to make a blanket statement. You never know what the distraction that screws up a game is going to be. You can't pinpoint it. It's a thousand little microaggressions, and you never know exactly. So when it comes to kind of just reducing noise in your life as much as possible, reducing distraction, mm-hmm. it's not a matter of like, oh yeah, because you did this podcast, you ended up losing a game in October. But I think in terms of how it affects your overall mindset and your preparation and everything else, it's like keeping things as quiet as possible in your life is important. And CJ, at the end of the conference, CJ, they asked about his New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
And he basically said it was, he said, get right with the Lord.
He said, get closer to the Lord. He said
he'd had,
he said this season he'd been kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So it was, I think it was to get both feet back in with the Lord.
Yeah, I didn't know whether he was talking about his relationship with the Lord at that point or if he was talking about, okay, yeah. Well, yeah, and he brought up fasting, too. He said fasting and prayer.
He kind of dropped that in there. I'm like, I don't know. I'd save the fasting for after the Super Bowl.
Well, like, intermittent fasting can be great if you do it right. It's just, not that he, and he'd be doing it for religious purposes, but yeah, I hope it's not like a 72-hour fast or something.
Right,
I don't, yeah. I don't need him to, like, now. Trying to relive, like, Moses' walk through the desert or something. Yeah. I don't, nothing like that.
No.
Like, a little 12-hour fast here and there could be good for you.
There you go.
And just spend it in prayer. Yeah, I'm gung-ho for that.
Okay.
I don't need him doing anything drastic or severe.
You
he comes, he comes into the playoffs weighing like 170, dehydrated.
That would suck. CJ Stroud looks super skinny for this wild card round game. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, could a Hall of Famer be done after this Sunday? And we've got a leader in the clubhouse so far. I know we're only 2 days in. The dumbest NFL story of the year so far. 2 days in. We've got a leader in the clubhouse. We've got that for you coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Leader in the clubhouse for dumbest story of the year so far. Like it getting any attention. The Cowboys cutting Ezekiel Elliott so he can sign with a contender.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it happened a couple days ago, yeah. But it's still bothering me. Like, the first that he's worth signing. Like, he's looked exactly how a lot of people thought he'd look this year, which is washed. In the last 7 games, he's had 20 carries for 77 yards. I mean, what team wouldn't want that on their roster? But the other thing is, like... Zeke has never struck me as a guy like a team would sign. Like, that's a guy that deserves a Super Bowl championship right there.
No, he's been kind of evidence of, like, man, the Dallas and the Cowboys might just flat out ruin everything because it's impossible for a guy like Ezekiel Elliott to really genuinely thrive long-term in that environment, yeah. Because he's all about partaking of everything that
right.
that Dallas has to offer to its Cowboys players, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, anyway, we want Zeke to be able to sign with a contender. I'm like, what contender is just going to bring Zeke on? So that's the leader in the clubhouse. It's not a long list. We haven't had any really stupid stories this year, and I'm 100% certain it'll get surpassed here very soon, but that story bugged me yesterday.
It is, I'll tell you what, man, it is a shame compared to his first 4 years in the league. He's just a force, you know. He's been averaging, he hasn't averaged more than 3.8 yards per carry for the last 3 seasons.
Yeah.
This year it's at 3.1.
Yeah.
Now, having said all that, I feel like he still does have a certain level of athleticism that maybe if you spring it on teams, you ambush people with it.
Don't do this.
What?
Are you saying the Texans should sign Ezekiel Elliott?
No.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
No.
Gotcha. They wouldn't
It'd be nice if they still... I would have preferred, if I had my druthers, they would have just never traded away Cam Akers. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I'd like to have seen happen.
If we could redo that one, yeah.
I wonder, okay, yeah, let's do it real quick. Do you think, from your gut, do you think Cam Akers or Ezekiel Elliott has had a more productive season this year?
Cam Akers, for sure. Right? I mean, the couple of Vikings games I've watched, Cam gets in there and does things.
Oh, yeah, but he's still not. He's had some good moments.
Yeah.
But he's averaging, I want to say he's also averaging less than 4.0. He's averaging 4 yards per attempt.
There you go. The high water
mark. He's got 58 carries for 232 yards. Ezekiel Elliott has 74 carries for 226 yards.
Boy, this is a comp for the ages right here. I didn't think.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott and Cam Akers. I'm with you on Cam and the Texans. Like, every time I do watch the Vikings and Cam gets in there and makes plays, I'm like, probably could have done that on like 7 carries for the Texans. That would have been nice.
I'll tell you the difference. I'm going to guess that the long run for Ezekiel is not anything like Cam. Like, so Cam Akers' long run is 11 yards. Or excuse me, Ezekiel Elliott's long run this year is 11 yards.
Mm, what a scamper. Yeah.
Cam Akers has a 25-yarder in
it. Hey, man.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. So that's dumb story number one. Aaron Rodgers was asked yesterday about the possibility of Sunday being his last game.
Have you thought at all, Aaron, about if this is your last game or could be your last game?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And what are your, like, when you reflect on that at all, those 3 months?
No, just a lot of gratitude for the last 20 years and the many countless lives I've encountered and amazing teammates and coaches I now call friends. Experiences I've had, memories, a lot of great memories, a lot of great people impacted my life. Ones that know it, ones that might not even know it, you know, by just side comments or putting an arm around me at the right time. But not just those 20 years, you know, I had great college coaches at Cal and junior college and high school coaches. And, you know, this game has given me a lot. I've given a lot back to it, and I'm thankful for it. I'm not thinking, you know, I won't be thinking about that come game day. I'll just be enjoying this. I'm trying to stay in the moment. But, of course, it's been a long career. I'm really proud of what I've been able to be a part of, what I've been able to accomplish, and also looking forward to a nice mental and physical rest.
Okay.
I know. I think he genuinely doesn't know whether he's playing next year or not.
I agree.
I think I know. People are always skeptical of that. Which surprises me because I feel like it's the most natural thing in the world. Like when you after you get to a certain age and you've played that many seasons. Like, there's a point where at the very end of every season, you're like, I can't do this again. Oh, man, this sucks. Like, my body feels awful. And you know that.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you know that you need some distance and time to kind of reflect on things. And then, obviously, with the Jets, the big question would be, all right, what's the environment look like? What am I coming back to? So my bigger question would be, all right, what timeline is Aaron going to be operating on? And are they going to be able to get a hold of him by the time it's time to start thinking about, you know, we're coming up on free agency. We may like want to sign a quarterback if you're going to retire. Could you let us know?
Yeah.
And they can't get a hold of him because he claims he doesn't have good cell phone reception in Malibu.
I wonder, my big question isn't, does Aaron Rodgers want to play? My big question would be, does anybody want Aaron Rodgers? And my comparison to that is, as I'm listening to him talk, and thinking this through, I think about Cam Newton. And Cam Newton, who was dynamite as a Carolina Panther, started to peter out, ends up going to New England. His New England year was kind of the equivalent of whatever this stint that Rodgers has had in New York, where he's dipping his toe in the water. You know, some other team makes him the starter, hoping he can be the guy. I think New York had higher hopes for Aaron Rodgers than maybe New England in their heart of hearts had for Cam. But where I think the comparison holds water for me is that both in New England with Cam and in New York with Aaron Rodgers, it's very evident that these guys aren't nearly the players that they were when they were at their peak, not even close. And yet, are these guys wired to be a backup? Are they wired to mentor young? Because that's the stage they're headed towards. And Cam, you know, Cam had that one little stint in Carolina at the end of 2021, which felt more like they were bringing him back for nostalgia than anything else. Yeah. The team stunk. They brought him back. He started a few games. He was terrible. And next thing you know, he's out of the league and doing videos where he's comparing himself to half of the starting quarterbacks in the league, saying, I'm better than these guys.
Yeah.
I don't know that Aaron Rodgers gets on the video circuit like Cam did and campaigning to get a job, but I could see where teams would just say, they watch all the drama that comes with Aaron Rodgers, and frankly, it's more drama than came with Cam Newton. And they're like, he's just not good enough for us to bring this into our building right now.
Especially, I think the thing is, too, with the Jets, there are certain parts of their offense that felt stodgy and antiquated, despite having Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams, that were probably because that's the way that Aaron Rodgers likes to operate.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants, you want to be one of these teams that's got pre-snap motion all over the place and shifts and everything else like that, which is harder to do. It's not as simple as just doing it. But Aaron Rodgers doesn't operate that way and doesn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain part of Aaron Rodgers where it's not just his physical age. It's just that, like, man, he's kind of running an antiquated playbook. And I think there's a lot of part of it is he had an offensive coordinator that was hand-selected for him who's never proven that he can actually be a good offensive coordinator, right?
He's a boob.
Yeah. So I think there's so many questions about all that stuff on the pure football side of things, where I think even if Aaron Rodgers looked a little physically better, people might be like, I don't know, man, because is he going to get along with our offensive coordinator? Is he going to do what our offensive coordinator wants him to do? There's 32 teams.
There are.
I think he's done.
I think he's done. I'm with you. I think he's done. I think Sunday.
I don't think a coach takes the Jets job thinking like, okay, my first year is going to be seeing what Aaron Rodgers still has left in the tank.
The only way that Aaron Rodgers sticks around with the Jets and is in line with the coach is if they promote Nathaniel Hackett to head coach.
Yeah.
You know, which obviously isn't happening. It's the Jets, so who the hell knows?
Very rare. The demotion from play caller, they let him keep his title, which feels even more degrading. Like, they're like, hey, listen, you're still the offensive coordinator. You're just not allowed to do all the offensive coordinator things. Here, we'll give you a hat that says OC on it.
And a business card. Do you laugh every time they show Nathaniel Hackett, like, up in the booth, like, with his iPad out in front of him like I do? I'm like, there's no way he's not even watching football on there.
You think,
like,
he's playing Candy Crush?
Yeah, Candy Crush or Angry Birds or, you know,
In Gladiator 2, Sean, the movie, it's these brothers are emperors. They're co-emperors, but it's very clear that one of them is an idiot and one of them is running the show.
Right.
And it feels like that. It feels like Nathaniel Hackett is the co-emperor that has a pet monkey that he actually officially names one of his official advisors.
That happens.
And is just kind of like cackling and laughing and stuff. It just not really checked in.
Oh, that's funny. I've seen Gladiator 2 and I'm laughing at that one.
This is the big problem with Gladiator 2. No, I won't give any spoilers. But this is a little bit of a spoiler if you haven't seen it yet.
Right.
It's a movie that I enjoyed it, but only because it was a sequel to Gladiator.
Sure.
If it were a standalone movie, it would have been awful.
Okay.
But one of the biggest problems was that they tell you that these emperors are evil and bad, and they're bad for Rome. But the only thing they do to show it is that, like, oh, all right, they're, like, drunken, like, they're into a lot of kinky stuff,
yeah,
and they're kind of goofy.
Okay,
but they never show a single thing where you're like, oh god, oh these people are awful. It's more like, oh, they're like spoiled rich kids.
Yeah,
I didn't see a single. They didn't torture a single person or anything. I'm like, they're just weird. They're just like weird prep school kids who got a little too much money from daddy too early on.
Real draconian regime going on there. They're goofy. Oh, no.
I'm like, yeah. I'm more worried that he's gonna slip a roofie in my girlfriend's drink, yeah, more so than anything else. Like, I'm not really worried about what he's doing to the people or anything, because they don't show any of it.
Hey, you wrote down, you have my son, who may be listening right now, he's working today. He may be driving in. So it's a good time. You had advice for my son.
Okay. So I know he's big into the Zyn. He's a Zyn addict.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, Zyn, the nicotine pouches they put in.
Right.
So it's interesting with these nicotine pouches, because a lot of the research they have on nicotine is like nicotine when it's delivered in a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that that's bad for you in a lot of reasons,
yes,
in a lot of ways. But the one that might resonate the most with young people is that cigarette smoking can cause hair loss. It can cause it way earlier.
Okay.
But with the nicotine pouches, there's not a lot of research done on, okay, when you're getting just nicotine and not all the other carcinogens and everything that you're inhaling into your lungs, like, what are the negative drawbacks and everything? There's not a lot of scientific studies on the hair loss part of it, but they know that the effects are a lot of the similar things that could cause hair loss.
Okay, okay.
So there is a chance that nicotine pouches might accelerate hair loss, and you might just want to keep that in mind.
Okay, you're not advising him one way or the other, just you want him to know that possible medical factor.
There's a possible, because it worked for me for the most part. I was kind of experimenting with the nicotine pouches a little bit. And look, we know from here, like, all of us know that we shouldn't be eating unhealthy food.
But
heart disease is decades off.
Yeah,
I don't have to worry about that, you know?
Yeah.
But if something's going to, you know, sometimes worrying about the vanity part of it is more expedient.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the long-term effects of nicotine pouches are, but in the short term, if it could cause hair loss, that hits me.
That's good.
Know?
And your advice is going to resonate with Sammy. You're his favorite host on this show, just so you know. And he's got a beautiful head of hair.
Right.
You know, like he's got... Like I said,
there aren't specific studies done on it yet, but there's the theories and evidence that might be the case.
And this goes, that advice goes for the whole lot of you out there, you know?
Yeah.
It's all you Zinsters out there. Boy, Sammy. I look, when I was 19 and 20, back at that age, I looked exactly like Sammy looked at that age. We diverged in the woods.
Your hair was exactly the same?
Hair was exactly the same, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'll send you the picture. It was on the 30 for 30, Catholics versus Convicts was on this week. And I'm pictured in that 30 for 30 at age 19.
Well, I remember that, but that was at 19. Sammy's 25.
Yeah, no, not anymore. No, like by 25, I was losing my hair.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So at the age of 25, you didn't look like Sammy.
No, it didn't look like Sammy.
Sammy might have escaped the hair loss gene.
He may have, yeah. He may be okay. Now, he may have a lot of other stuff going on, but the hair, he's going to have a beautiful head of hair, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It looks like there's a leader in the clubhouse for Alex Bregman, but it also looks like Alex Bregman may have overplayed his hand. This is getting very, very interesting here. Right in the midst of football season, we've got old Alex Bregman. So we'll tell you who the leader in the clubhouse is and how do Astro fans react if this happens. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.